It's Tuesday, May 14, 2013. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Yesterday, in a Philadelphia courtroom, abortion doctor Kermit Gosnell was convicted of three counts of first-degree murder. His conviction came as a jury found him guilty of severing the spinal cords of infants born during abortions in his abortion clinic in West Philadelphia. The doctor was also convicted of involuntary manslaughter. He faced that charge after the 2009 death of a 41-year-old Virginia woman who died from an overdose of drugs while undergoing an abortion conducted by Dr. Gosnell in his clinic. This is one of the most important stories in a long time that helps us to focus on the nation's worldview when it comes to the issue of abortion. And as you look at the responses to the trial, to the events that caused the trial, and now to the verdict, you're going to see the confusion, the deep worldview and moral confusion within America over the issue of the sanctity of human life. For instance, as the Washington Post describes the story, they describe it as the doctor found guilty of first-degree murder, but it wasn't for abortion, not for late-term abortion, not even for a botched abortion, but rather for severing the spinal cords of infants born during abortions. That's a very interesting and calculated turn of a phrase in the lead to an article that appears in one of the nation's most influential newspapers. The clash of worldviews over the issue of the sanctity of human life becomes very clear in the Wall Street Journal's coverage when reporter Peter Loftus writes this, quote, "The case became the latest flashpoint in the long-running debate over abortion. Opponents of abortion rights say the charges illustrate the violence inherent in terminating pregnancies and show the need for tighter oversight of abortion clinics. Supporters of abortion rights have condemned the alleged practices at Dr. Gosnell's clinic and say the case shows the need for women's access to safe abortion practices," end quote. That is a very insightful, if troubling, paragraph because it does accurately describe two very different worldviews in a response to a situation as horrifying as that of the abortion clinic of Dr. Kermit Gosnell. Certain people looking at that is those who believe in the sanctity and dignity of every single human life, and see not just an atrocity that took place within an abortion clinic, but rather the atrocity of abortion and of the abortion industry and of the example of this one clinic as nothing more than an extreme and now revealed example of the violence that goes on in millions of wombs routinely around the world. Now you take the other side, operating out of a very different worldview, and they see the primary issue here not as the sanctity of an unborn life, but rather the sovereign autonomy of the woman to decide her own reproductive future. And what they see in the horror picture of Dr. Kermit Gosnell's abortion clinic is all the evidence they need to say, look, we need safe and free abortions for underprivileged women so that they would not try to do something so extreme as to go even to an abortion clinic like this. You cannot reconcile those two worldviews. They start from fundamentally different premises. And when you think about it, the fundamental moral principles that lead to those very different evaluations can't come just from the issue of the sanctity of life. It can't come just from the issue of abortion. There has to be something behind this. And the something behind this is the understanding of what human life actually means and who determines what a human life is worth. There are those among us who believe that there is, at least in the responsibility of the society at large or of individuals within it, a certain amount of right whereby we say who gets to live and who gets to die. The abortion rights industry is based upon the assumption that at least when it comes to the unborn, some living person has the right to decide that someone else will simply have to die. Now, on the other side of this, you have a worldview that understands that every single human life is of sacred worth. The sanctity of human life is not an accidental concept. That word sanctity means holiness, and it refers to the fact that the human being is made by a divine creator for his glory. In other words, if you come from a fundamentally secular worldview, there's no way that you can use the word sanctity with anything other than the intent to give something of a compliment. It's not making an ontological claim. In other words, it's not claiming that there's actually an objective reality of such value because a living creator has established that value. Thus far, in the immediate hours after the conviction of Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the big question before the court will be the penalty. Prosecutors in the case have indicated that they will intend to seek the death penalty. After all, this is a doctor who has now been found guilty of three intentional homicides of living human beings, otherwise known as babies. Dr. Gosnell originally faced an indictment for 7 counts of first-degree murder. He was acquitted on 1. 3 were removed from the count by the judge, but the 3 remained, and the doctor was found guilty, not just of murder, but of first-degree murder in all 3 of those cases. Of course, he was also found, as we have said, guilty of involuntary manslaughter in the death of the woman who died in the midst of a treatment at his abortion clinic. The jury will have a lot to consider here, but it is telling that we have, in this case, prosecutors going to the court to ask for the death penalty for a man who is convicted now, not just accused of, but now convicted of killing in a premeditated fashion 3 living human beings, whom he could have killed, we need to note, legally if he had just killed them before removing them from the body of their mother. This is a very troubling story. It's troubling at every level. If it doesn't sear the conscience of America, we have to wonder what in the world would. One of the most revealing essays yet to come out in terms of the torrent of words sure to follow this conviction is an article that appeared at Time.com. Time magazine offers the article 3 Takeaways from the Kermit Gosnell Trial. The authors are Kate Pickett and Adam Sorensen. They suggest 3 points. Each one of them deserves our attention. The first point they make is, quote, "This was not a case about the morality of legal late-term abortion," end quote. The authors argue Gosnell's trial was about illegal abortion and homicide. The methods Gosnell used to end the lives of the babies cited in the case against him, including snipping their necks with scissors after they were outside the womb, are medically indefensible by any measure in any case, end quote. That's a very interesting and indeed troubling by understatement passage. What these authors are saying is that the case of Kermit Gosnell says nothing about, let me use their words again, the morality of legal late-term abortion. In other words, they're saying, we're only talking about this because the babies were murdered after they were removed from their mother's bodies. Had they been killed while they were still inside the body, there would be no legal issue whatsoever. Well, whether they know or not, they have pointed to something that is legally true, but they have overstated the case atrociously when they say it's not about the morality of legal late-term abortion. For any thinking, morally sensible person, it cannot be about anything other than the morality of legal late-term abortion. The only thing that distinguishes these 3 children, now found to have been murdered by this doctor, is that they died only after, perhaps even minutes after or seconds after, they were removed from the bodies of their mother. That cannot be a morally significant distinction. We can't be talking here about someone who within seconds becomes a person worthy of life when seconds before they did not have such a status, nor can we talk about a matter of centimeters or inches. That is moral nonsense, and Americans need to see that very clearly. The second statement made in the Time article is this: state regulation is where the action is on abortion. They're right about that. The reporters say, by all counts, Pennsylvania state regulators failed spectacularly in the Kermit Gosnell case. Authorities neglected to properly and consistently inspect Gosnell's clinic, and at least 2 top health officials were fired in the wake of the scandal. Now, what's really interesting about this is that it's the pro-abortion side that so often fights any significant state regulation. But the statement made by the reporters is nonetheless profoundly right. State regulation is where the action is. That's why you've had 14 states in the first 3 months of 2013 take significant effort and action to limit access to abortion, to protect the sanctity of human life. That's 14 out of 50 states in just 3 months. Those on the pro-abortion side are overwhelmingly concerned about state regulations yet to come, and we can only hope and pray that the Gosnell case becomes the catalyst not only for regulation, but far more importantly for people seeing the reality, the moral reality, of what abortion represents. The last of the 3 statements identified as 3 takeaways from the Kermit Gosnell trial in Time magazine is this, quote, "While it wasn't completely ignored, the Gosnell trial revealed the mainstream media's hesitancy to swarm a story about horrifying abortion-related crime," end quote. That's true, but again, it is a significant understatement. The reporters write, quote, "Philadelphia news outlets did an exemplary job of covering the Gosnell trial, but the national media did not. 2 years after outlets like the Associated Press and the New York Times covered Gosnell's arrest and a judge issued a preliminary gag order on his trial, few representatives in the mainstream media showed up to cover the testimony in early 2013. In contrast, cases like the murder of an abortion provider, George Tiller, remained in the public eye for their duration. Conservative activists interpreted this aloofness as evidence of pro-choice bias and pressured major outlets to cover the story more aggressively. Some reporters initially shrugged off this criticism. One healthcare writer publicly dismissed the case as a, quote, local crime story, but most outlets corrected course and devoted more attention to the trial," end quote. Now, this is where the reporters go on and editorialize a bit. in a very interesting way. They write, quote, part of the media's hesitation probably did have to do with politics. It's no secret that most journalists are socially liberal. But a more powerful explanation might have to do with the extremely disturbing nature of the crime and its proximity to issues, abortion, poverty, and race, that Americans are often uncomfortable discussing. Kidnapping and terrorism are tabloid fodder, write the reporters, but the grisly details of the Gosnell case are revulsive even to the most desensitized rubbernecker, end quote. Our attention is certainly rightly drawn to that paragraph, and the reporters are making some very interesting statements. First of all, they affirm that most journalists are socially liberal and thus would tend to stray away from this kind of story. They also, to their credit, point out that the national media failed in providing adequate coverage of the story until they were forced by public pressure to bring about something of a change of course. But when you look at the national conversation, you hear the public chatter, and you look at the media coverage of this event now after Dr. Gosnell has been convicted on 3 counts of first-degree murder, what you see is that the worldview with which one comes to an occasion, a story, an atrocity like this, determines whether one is going to see this fundamentally as a political issue or as a moral issue, as a medical issue or as an issue of the sanctity of human life. And at the end of the day, neither side is going to be satisfied with any individual piece of news coverage, because the news coverage in a story like this is going to have to tell the story. And that's the point, isn't it? How the story is told tells everything. Shifting the scene to the state of Minnesota, as expected yesterday, the Minnesota Senate cleared the way for legal same-sex marriage in that state. The governor is expected to sign the bill into law as early as today. Once that happens, Minnesota becomes the 12th state in the union to have legal same-sex marriage and the first in the Midwest to have legal same-sex marriage after legislative action. The New York Times reporting on the story says this, in a way, the vote to allow same-sex marriage shows how rapidly sentiment on the issue has shifted in the state. For much of 2012, Minnesota debated an amendment that would have enshrined the state's existing ban on gay marriage in the state's constitution. But voters in November rejected the amendment. The reporters go on to say, and in this case that's Monica Davey of the New York Times, she says, quote, they also sent majorities of Democrats to both chambers of the state legislature, setting off an intense new push to legalize same-sex marriage. Now, the story is actually even more dramatic than the New York Times there indicates. Because when you look at a state like Minnesota, you're looking at an alternative, an exception, to what you find on the two coasts in terms of liberalism in the Northeast and on the West Coast. Minnesota historically has been a progressive state, but a progressive state based in agrarian values, more likely to defend heterosexual marriage than to amend it. Something very significant has happened here, and it leads us to ask that question that is very much on our minds, and that is, how did we reach this point of velocity in moral change in America? For instance, the New York Times began that paragraph, in a way, the vote to allow same-sex marriage shows how rapidly sentiment on the issue has shifted in the state. Of course, they mean the state of Minnesota. But they could have said in the nation, because measurably, in the nation, we have a very significant movement on this issue coast to coast. Now, when you look at Minnesota, the story is even, as we've said, more dramatic than most in the major media are recognizing. Because back in 1971, the first state to have to face a legal question in its courts on same-sex marriage was none other than Minnesota. As David Schultz reports for the Daily Planet, Minnesota is home to the first case in the nation adjudicating bans on same-sex marriage. In the case known as Baker, the issue was whether a state law backing an expressly statutory prohibition against same-sex marriages signaled a legislative intent to authorize such marriages. The Minnesota Supreme Court declared not, contending furthermore that the ban on same-sex marriage did not violate the 1st, 8th, 9th, or 14th Amendments in the United States Constitution. So in other words, what took place in 2013 was a direct reversal of what took place in an unprecedented way in the state of Minnesota back in 1971. Why was that story not such a splash back in 1971? It is because no one was thinking about or talking about same-sex marriage in the national media. No one saw this as a very significant story. What a difference a generation makes. Secondly, and David Schultz makes this point, when you look at the state of Minnesota, you're looking at the fact that this is a state that was embroiled for the last year, that is the year 2012, in an effort that many thought would be successful to pass a constitutional amendment to prohibit legalized same-sex marriage. So in other words, what was openly debated throughout the state just a matter of months ago. What went down to defeat only by a 53-47 vote just about 5 or 6 months ago is now completely reversed by legislative action. There is no state in the union. There is no situation or precedent of this kind of change in that short of an amount of time. This should lead Christians concerned with the importance of worldview to ask a very important and troubling question. How can the nation's understanding of the morality of same-sex marriage, of the rightness or wrongness of legalized same-sex marriage, shift so quickly? We need to understand that worldviews reveal and eventually determine positions on issues such as this. But in short order, worldviews do not change this much. In other words, what is being revealed now, with the velocity of this change on the issue of same-sex marriage, is that an underlying shift in the worldview had taken place sometime before. When it was unnoticed, many Americans, including many of our neighbors, including perhaps many of the same people we share a pew with at church, had begun to shift their fundamental worldview away from one in which the biblical authority was primary and the understanding of morality in terms of that revealed within the scripture was mandatory to something that is very different. There are all kinds of shifts that take place into this, a shift perhaps from an understanding of the rule of law in one sense to a more libertarian understanding, a shift from an objective morality as revealed in scripture to something that is more relative, but those shifts are not something you often observe. What you observe is a change in a position at the surface level. That's what we see now in America in this vast, fast change on the issue of same-sex marriage. We ask, as many in the national media are asking, how could that change come so quickly? Well, that's a good question, and it should lead Christians to understand that that kind of change doesn't really come as quickly as it first may appear. Eventually, we're going to have to understand that the change that matters here, that matters most, is a change that took place when we weren't noticing it, when we didn't see it. We'll have to be thinking a lot more about that in weeks and months, not to mention years to come, because here is the ominous reality. If this kind of moral change can take place on the issue of same-sex marriage so quickly, it tells us that the same thing can happen on other issues as well. That should lead thinking Christians to think very deeply about what had to happen prior that what we see now could happen in our present. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmoeller.com. To follow me on Twitter, go to twitter.com/Albert Moeller. For information on the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information on Boyce College, just go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.